We start, as we do every Thursday, with Industry Chatter, where we explore a company that's doing business with the federal government and learn about how they're doing it. Diane Cochran's the Chief Operating Officer of the Government Services Division for Kelly Anderson and Associates, and she's my guest on Industry Chatter today. It's great to see you, Diane. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you, Francis. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Let's start like we always do. Tell me about what your company does for federal clients.
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to stress that we're not a large business. We're a medium-sized business, employee-owned, been in business since 1984. Kelly Anderson really originated with the model that we would be helping industry, other industries, get into government contracting space. And it kind of evolved over the years into now we're doing direct contracting from Kelly Anderson to government, and also still supporting our big industry partners in getting government contracts. We perform the full suite of services in human resources. That's our largest area of focus in Kelly Anderson. As far as the company business goes, we do some financial, we do some audit services, remediation. We also do, on the industry side, our focus is helping those companies do business development, capture management, the full suite of acquisition services to help them win government contracts. So our whole business is really based on government service provision.
The government clients that you work with directly, when they come to you right now, what are you seeing them asking about, or maybe not even at the RFP level in this pre-RFP collaborative emphasis that everybody's talking about, Dan Gordon, Martha Johnson, and so on. What kind of things are they asking you about along the lines of, do you do this, or what's the best practice in this, or that kind of thing?
Well, There's a number of different ways to answer that. From my perspective, from the government side, we'll get calls frequently from an agency because they've seen us on the GSA schedule and can look at what our capabilities are. And they'll ask us questions about what kind of services we can provide, and we'll give them some ideas of what we've done in the past, what we can do for them. And that also leads me to indicate that I would love to see more pre-solicitation collaboration.
Yeah.
We all agree that contracting officers in the government are really, really worked hard. They have a huge burden to carry. So solicitations, when they come out, are sometimes not as clear as they could be. So we would love to see a lot more pre-solicitation collaboration. So that's something that we all like to see happen.
Is that getting better, do you think? Or it's kind of flat?
I think it's flat. I just think the demands on their time is so great. Frequently we'll see solicitations that are issued that have to be extremely examined with lots of questions and answers and clarification. And I think that's just a result of the workload that they carry. The contracting workforce, the acquisition workforce in the government is probably not as well staffed as it has to be to handle the workload that they have right now.
Yeah. The workload continues to increase, and yet every kind of legislation, everything that we're seeing indicates the size of government overall is going to at least stay the same, maybe shrink over the next couple of years. Are there strategies that you foresee? You have a lot of experience in HR and government. Are there strategies that you foresee agency managers being able to use to try to push people that maybe already are in service in another area into the acquisition workforce to help build that up?
That's been a very big challenge for government since the acquisition reform legislation that's come on. And there's been a lot of hiring and acquisition. But I think contracting and federal procurement is very complex and very detail-oriented. And there are so many players involved that it's pretty much a more than a full-time job for any agency's contracting staff to handle. So this is a big challenge for government.
I talked to an acquisition pro not too long ago in government at one of the highest levels of the acquisition shop at his agency, and he said his first day on the job as an acquisition pro, his training was he was given a copy of the FAR and said, read this. Was told to read, and it's like a foot tall.
A foot tall, right.
And he started to read it, and he just went, oh. And that actually is one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, because as I talk to people all over government, and this isn't just in the HR people, this is all over because agencies want their the managers to get more involved in the hiring process, mm-hmm. understanding how important onboarding is as part of bringing somebody in and not and making sure they show up and that first week to 6 months that somebody's on the job, they become really integrated into the agencies. Is that something that you still see agencies struggling with?
Agencies are focusing on that. They're trying to figure out how to do that. Again, though, the emphasis is on quick, timely, get it done quick, and perhaps they don't have the resources available to help them make those smooth transitions from, you know, private sector to federal government or even from federal government to federal government. It's definitely a concern.
Mm-hmm.
I left the government a year and a half ago, and I saw that throughout my 30 years in government, and I still see it, that it's a tremendous concern on how we onboard people, how we not only streamline the federal hiring process, but get the same quality that we always expected to get.
Yeah.
And speed doesn't necessarily mean good quality.
Well, and that's a really good point, because there's been a lot of emphasis in the last, not just from Director Barry, but from Director Springer before him, mm-hmm. about speeding up the hiring process. And it's well placed, I'm sure you would agree.
I would.
But the whole idea, if you quickly hire somebody who's not qualified to do the job, you haven't really accomplished
Which
much.
Is why I think the president in his current directive and Director Barry have emphasized management's involvement.
Mm-hmm.
I think, having been in HR my whole life, I've seen the evolution of managers being very, very involved in the hiring process to turning it over to HR,
yeah.
and saying, that's your job, go do it. And that's uh-huh. not necessarily. Human resources management has management in it for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
So managers have to be brought back into the fold to be part of the hiring process to not only select the right person, the quality person, but to develop them, retain them, and keep them engaged and in the federal workforce.
And my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that the dirty little secret there is that HR wants the managers to be involved. They don't want to do it on their own. They don't want it. It's not like they treat it as a fiefdom. They want to have the hiring managers involved, and so that they can get quality people. Is that correct?
It's absolutely true, but the demands on everyone's time are such that the ideal situation doesn't always occur.
Yeah. If somebody was asking you about your company, and what would you tell them if they asked you about something that maybe you do that not everybody would think that you would do?
That's a good question. I think the thing that makes us very unique is we have a tremendous cadre and bench of experienced former federal employees. Several senior executives, federal managers, and experienced federal employees who know the culture of the agencies, who know the problems the agencies face, especially if they're recently retired. They know what the challenges are and what the strategies are to approach those agencies.
Mm-hmm.
So our federal expertise that we can pull from is very deep and very, very exceptional.
My guest is Diane Cochran. She's the Chief Operating Officer of the Government Services Division at Kelly Anderson and Associates, and we'll continue our industry chatter conversation in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
Angered by civilian casualties, Afghan President Hamid Karzai says he will no longer allow NATO strikes on houses, issuing his strongest statement yet against strikes that the military alliance says are necessary to win the war on Taliban insurgents. His remarks follow a recent strike that mistakenly killed a group of children and women in southern Helmand province. He said it would be the last. I'm J.J. Green.
Have you ever thought about going to Antarctica or flying over it? When the initial flight test took place for the A380 from Australia to Chile, the aircraft flew over the South Pole, and thanks to high-frequency data link coverage provided by Airink, the flight crew were never out of touch. Imagine being the only company in the world that provides critical communications coverage everywhere it's needed. Airink does. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
Meeting Mission Goals Through Technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Library of Congress is using the Internet to provide free online access to thousands of the nation's oldest sound recordings. The National Jukebox went online this month, posting more than 10,000 historical music and spoken word recordings made between 1901 and 1925. Users can select and stream the recordings at loc.gov/jukebox. For the time being, the recordings are from the catalogs of Columbia and Victor, the two oldest record companies in the world.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
The Ballistic Missile Defense Report is provided by Raytheon.
President Obama and Russian President Medvedev held a private meeting on May 26th to discuss missile defense and security policy at the G8 Economic Summit in France. The meeting comes after President Medvedev expressed concern over the United States' current approach for missile defense in Europe, which would deploy land and sea-based interceptors around Europe. After their meeting, the two leaders emphasized the need for continued cooperation on missile defense and the European-based missile defense shield.
5 million hours of experience, 19 direct hit intercepts, unmatched engineering. Raytheon Standard Missile 3 is preserving freedom at home and around the world. Now Raytheon engineers are developing the next generation SM-3. When seconds matter and there's no margin for error, Raytheon Standard Missile 3 delivers. In fact, there's nothing standard about it. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
Tom Temin here with a preview of tomorrow's Federal Drive. Virginia Congressman Jerry Connolly joins us to discuss BRAC, the federal budget, and what's ahead for federal employees themselves. And everything from shoes to manuscripts belonging to the Unabomber are about to be auctioned off. The Marshall Service will tell us how that all works. Those stories and more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Diane Cochran, the Chief Operating Officer of the Government Services Division at Kelly Anderson & Associates, is my guest on Industry Chatter today. We talked a little bit about the experience that you had in government before you joined Kelly Anderson. Mm-hmm. Give us kind of a thumbnail of that so people have a context of where you're coming from on some of these things.
Well, I was born an HR person. Spent 20 years in Department of Defense, and that 20 years, for the most part, was spent out in the field. Came to Washington in 2000 to the Pentagon and worked at the Air Staff, what they called the Headquarters Air Force Personnel Directorate, and went to Department of Energy, became a senior executive at Department of Energy and Human Capital. Then did my career broadening experience at OPM, which was a fabulous experience. I had 2 years there as a deputy associate director, and I was there during the human capital scorecard days during the PMA. So I worked directly with agencies on how they could improve their human capital processes and procedures and policies. And then I went back to the Department of Energy as the deputy assistant secretary for human capital in one of the very large programs and retired in August of 2009.
So you've been paying attention to these things for a long, long time. You must have started in government when you were like 7 years old.
That is so kind of you.
But after a career like that, to look at it from the outside looking in, what do you see now that you didn't see when you were in, if anything?
Not a lot, because I still feel very much a part of the government service. The company I'm with provides service to the government just as federal employees do. And in many cases, we work right alongside the federal employees, providing the same kind of work we did as federal employees. So I still feel very connected to government and still very committed to government service, which I think is an absolute wonderful career to have.
Is the arc that you're seeing overall headed upwards as far as progress being made in the kinds of things that we've been talking about?
This is an interesting time. With the budget situation the way it is and the concerns about budget, which we've all been following very faithfully, we are either directly or indirectly involved in government work. So we've seen that there is a definite decrease in the amount of work the government is buying right now. And we know that there's been tremendous discussion on the Hill about regulating the size of the federal workforce and the contractor workforce. So we are watching that very carefully. But I will tell you, Francis, that in my career, and especially in DOD, I saw that cyclically,
mm-hmm.
where there were times when we couldn't hire one for two, times we had to let contractors go, but it comes back. Mm-hmm. I think we see that a decrease in funding doesn't necessarily, or a decrease in staff doesn't necessarily mean a decrease in requirement
mm-hmm.
by the agency. They still got to get the same work done.
Yeah.
So the contractor workforce, in my opinion, is very much a part of the blended federal workforce and essential to the federal workforce. We certainly hope that there is no move to regulate that in any way, let agencies find the best value for the work they need to get done. And some work lends itself very well to contracting work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back in the 80s, DOD contracted out almost all the services, you know, grounds, supply, things like that, because it was more cost effective.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know over the years if that trend has shown to be true, but I think we still need to go back to look at what's the best way to provide government service, whether it be with a federal employee or a contractor.
Is that a case, too, because that then you go to the whole inherently governmental conversation, which we could do a whole hour probably just on that.
Yeah, and that's changed many times over the last couple of years, what that definition is.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about, was the fact that how do you deal with the fluidity of defining what's inherently governmental, where to some folks, to one administration maybe, a particular job description is, and to another one it isn't. And so you have the career folks like you were at the agencies that mm-hmm. are having to pivot back and forth based on that kind of a decision.
We were all initially fiercely protective of our government work. We all thought we were inherently governmental, particularly HR. I mean, procurement and acquisition, thought they were inherently governmental.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, we've seen that those services can be provided by a commercial firm with the right kinds of firewalls and the right kinds of clearances. That work can be done. So I don't see that. I think that that's what Kelly Anderson has in its favor. We're very agile. We're very flexible. We can make that case in either direction, and we can provide the same caliber of people they had in the government because they are former government people.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that that's not been a terrible challenge for us.
When this debate comes down to just insourcing versus outsourcing, mm-hmm. is that oversimplifying it a little bit too much, do you think?
Very much so. Very much so. You can certainly find best value by outsourcing. Not always, though, and that has to be carefully analyzed. But it makes sense for certain things that you don't need to expend. If I'm a federal government agency, I have a certain number of FTEs and certain numbers of dollars to spend on my federal payroll. It makes sense for me to look for the best way to provide that service.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not going to be a federal employee, I can certainly find contractors that can do that work and still be very cost effective and fiscally responsible.
If I'm one of your peers who's still in government and trying to plow through all of these things and mm-hmm. all the initiatives and so on and so forth, what kind of sit back, take a breath advice would you give to somebody who's sitting in that seat now and trying to figure out really where to how to make these decisions and figure out which of these, all of these various things that are coming at them to prioritize first?
Well, I think first of all, you decide what's most essential to get done and then who has to do it. And I say, don't draw a line in the sand right up front, because you will eventually change your mind when you're told this is going to be, you know, outsourced or contracted out. You'll find a way to make that work and make it work in your favor.
Mm-hmm.
So flexibility, again, not only on the side of the vendors, but on the side of the government managers, cannot be dug in to their mm-hmm. position, because it will change. The political environment will change. The approach will change. The philosophy will change. Work with it and make it work for you.
Mm-hmm. Is that flexibility harder sometimes, do you think, for the government side than for the vendor side?
You know, I think it's harder because of the generational thing that we have going on. That's certainly not going to be the case in 10 years when the baby boomers are out, because mm-hmm. they're so used to having that known environment lockstep. And things over the last 10 years have been so volatile that I think a lot of people from my generation have found it difficult to deal with that change. I think the folks we're hiring now are used to that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're very fluid.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to change. The culture will change. And it is changing.
Do you subscribe to the trough theory that Ron Sanders told me about on this show once, which was that you have folks that are in the 20 to 30-year service range, you have folks that are in the 0 to 10 range and not much in between?
Yeah, and my former boss, Linda Springer, was, you know, the retirement tsunami, remember that?
Yeah.
And the trough effect, that's been talked about for years. Reality is, it pretty much depends on what the economy is doing, what mm-hmm. the thrift savings plan is doing, and what retirement, you know, accounts are doing. If it were to come true, we'd lose 48% of the government today.
Yeah.
And we don't have a knowledge base or knowledge transfer to fill that, which I think is why some of the vendors provide that gap. But it hasn't proven to be actually happening yet. Mm-hmm. It could, though. It really could. You just never know.
I've been paying attention to this stuff for, I guess, 10 or 12 years mm-hmm. now, and I've never seen it. I've heard it talked about right. since the first day I was right. paying attention. And so to hear you say that it's been going on for a little longer
we've
than that.
We've all heard it. We've all looked at it. We all do our statistics. We do our projections. And what we find is most federal agents or most federal employees stay 5 years at least minimally past retirement. That's the average. Mm-hmm. Some longer. So if all of a sudden the stock market takes a huge jump and stays there a year or two, you'll see some people jumping, mm-hmm. especially since there's no pay raises coming for a while. The pay freeze is in effect. There's other things that are being talked about to, you know, reduce federal benefits. Maybe less attractive. Maybe they'd like to jump and come work for us.
Mm-hmm. The little plug there. That
there
wasn't,
you go.
That wasn't subtle, which I'll give you credit for. I can't hate you for that.
Yeah.
The thing that I think is interesting when you talk about the TSP and so on is we have heard anecdotally after expecting pay freeze, that's been around now for, I guess, 4 or 5 months. Mm-hmm. But anecdotally, we're not hearing that's at least in and of itself causing any great exodus of people. There no. don't seem to be a whole lot of people filing
for retirement.
What
are they going to go to?
Well, that's exactly it. You know, the deal, although not as good as it used to be that you have in government, is still better than a lot of what's out there for a lot
it
of
is,
people, is what it looks like
it is
from
very
my
good.
Vantage point.
It is very good, and it's a great career. If you're public service-minded, which I know a lot of our young folks are these mm-hmm. days, there's no better place to go than the federal government to work because you can do almost anything that you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
The federal government provides soup to nuts.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's mobility involved. There's places you can go that are very exciting. You don't have to stay in one place forever. Federal service is a wonderful avocation. I highly encourage it. I encourage my son to go into federal government. He is in federal government. So I don't see that we're going to lose people. And, you know, we may see them come and go in and out mm-hmm. because of the generational thing that's going on now.
Right.
You know, they're not stuck in one job for their whole career or one agency or one company. But mm-hmm. I think federal government will still attract people.
Diane Cochran's the Chief Operating Officer of the Government Services Division at Kelly Anderson and Associates. What agency does your son work for, can you say?
ICE.
Oh, cool.
He'll probably kill me for saying that. Sorry, Mike, but...
Well, I can't imagine that he would. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a bit much for your own mom, for mm-hmm. heaven's sake. More with Diane in a few minutes on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
Here's David Hunt, Medical Director in the Office of the National Coordinator within the Department of Health and Human Services, on the Visualizing the 21st Century of Healthcare Today panel, sponsored by HIMSS. Here he discusses his agency's challenges in electronic health records.
Our biggest challenge really is with small providers, practices with less than, say, 8 to 10 docs in their shop. We really need to continue to push implementation in that area probably more than any.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
HIMSS, the global leader in health IT education, invites healthcare policy leaders, IT decision makers, and providers to the Government Health IT Conference and Exhibition, June 14th and 15th. This is your chance to see how the latest innovations in federal and state interagency initiatives utilize IT to achieve improved care delivery and quality. Register at govhealthitconference.com and share successes, challenges, and best practices with decision makers from government, industry, and the healthcare community.
This is Lisa Millman from AFMA, the Army and Air Force Mutual Aid Association. For over 132 years, we've been protecting soldiers, airmen, and their families with low-cost life insurance. We've also been caring for survivors of members with unique survivor assistance services. At AFMA, we understand the many challenges that military families can face during their service and after the loss of a loved one. As a nonprofit membership association, AFMA always focuses on what is in the member's best interest. That means offering the best prices on life insurance for military personnel and the best services for survivors. And it also means offering policies with no war, no aviation, and no terrorism clauses or surcharges. For a free quote on life insurance, call the membership coordinator at 1-877-398-2263 or visit us online at AFMA.com today. That's AAF. MAA.com.
Listen next week for a special edition of the Business of Government Hours Conversation with Authors series, exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness. How has the Telework Enhancement Act of 2010 changed the way government does business? What are the challenges and risks of advancing telework in the federal government? How have advances in technology made open telework more of a reality? Host Michael Keegan discusses these questions with Professor Scott Overmeyer, author of the recent IBM Center report, Implementing Telework, Lessons Learned from Four Federal Agencies. Next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Profile America, Thursday, June 2nd. The North Atlantic hurricane season officially began yesterday and runs through November. Coastal areas stretching from North Carolina to Texas are the most vulnerable. In 1960, 14 million people lived in those areas. Today, that number is just under 37 million. From 1851 through last year, Florida was hit by 113 hurricanes. Texas is next at 63. Last year saw a very active season with 12 hurricanes, five of them Category 3 or higher in strength. The Weather Service officially began naming storms in 1950, and this year's first storm will be named Arlene. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Do you want to know how to manage stress, do more with less, work well with your political boss, protect your professional liability? If you're a senior executive or an SES candidate, you can't afford to miss Managing Smarter, the Senior Executives Association annual conference. Join former Representative Tom Davis, political pundit Norm Ornstein, and other speakers on June 16th at the Grand Hyatt Washington. For a complete agenda and to register, visit the SEA website, www.seniorexecs.org.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Diane Cochran, the Chief Operating Officer of the Government Services Division of Kelly Anderson & Associates, is my guest on Industry Chatter today. And throughout the your experience, both in government and now with Kelly Anderson & Associates, what are the good things that are happening, not just in HR, but in management overall in government? What are the things that I can sit back and say, boy, I'm glad that's happening that way?
Back when the Federal Human Capital Survey, now the Employee Viewpoint Survey, I think is what it's called, back when that started, one of the largest areas of concern was the perception of leadership in government. Constantly, scores were well below 50% of how employees perceived their government managers and leaders. And I think there's been a huge amount of work being done to actually improve the quality of leadership in government and the capabilities of managers. I give OPM a lot of credit for that because there's been some legislation passed and some requirements for training and development of managers. One of the things the government has not done well over the years, and I will say that because I was part of that, was once you make it to the top level, GS-15 manager, senior executive, you're considered done. You're considered fully developed. And many folks go into those roles without having a tremendous amount of managerial background. So there's been a big shift lately, in the last 5 or 6 years, to make sure the quality of management matches the quality of their technical expertise. And there's been a big emphasis on that. Totally support that. Definitely needed. And we've seen over the last several surveys, the numbers are coming up. What we really want to have is the best possible management, because managing the workforce means mission accomplishment. So getting the most out of the people you have and inspiring them to do the most is totally management's responsibility, and they're doing a better job of preparing for that and staying current on those things.
That's been one of the criticisms for a long time of the GS system, not the schedule itself, but the system, in that it rewards people who are good at their jobs, but not necessarily good at being a manager or making sure other people are good at meeting the mission.
The number of agencies now that are looking at continuing development and lifetime learning for senior executives is really impressive, when that was not done maybe 8 years ago. Once you became a senior executive, you were considered at the top of your game.
You didn't need to. You were perfect.
You were perfect. And many of those folks were perfect at what they did and what they knew in their career field. But the tough challenges of being a senior executive or a GS-15 manager in an agency is something you really have to continue to prepare for and hone your skills. And I've been very pleased about how agencies are going in that direction.
What are the best parts of that, of the preparation? When I think of tight budget times, I mm-hmm. think of travel going away and I think of training going away. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that training is the most important element of what you're talking about, the government deriving a great benefit from at that GS-15 SES right. or level.
And here we are in the same boat almost again where they're looking at cutting, and I would suspect training will be one of the areas they'll cut.
Mm-hmm.
But can agencies really afford to diminish their expertise and their leadership and management when they still have their mission requirements to meet and they still have to motivate people, develop people, retain people? And managers need to be, you know, actually developed along the way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
From the very first supervisory job they got, some agencies used to require everybody to go to first-year supervisory training, first level, before they got certified as being, you know, a supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of went away because it costs money. But I think the agencies do themselves a great disservice if they don't focus on developing their people. Otherwise, they're going to spend more money to get the work done. Hiring more people and throwing more employees at it is not the answer.
Yeah.
Managing the workforce to the best of your ability and being the best possible leader you can is the answer to getting the mission met.
Now, I've heard the nature versus nurture model thrown at management. Do you have an opinion about that one way or the other? Can you teach somebody who maybe doesn't inherently have the skills to be a manager to be at least a good manager, if not a great one?
I think you can, but I think there is something to the nature versus nurture. I think people will pick one of two paths. They'll pick the technical operating path where I go in and do my job
mm-hmm.
and don't want to expand. But then there's other folks that have that bent to want to grow and to actually be part of the decision-making process. You really want to focus your time and energy on those and let the other folks who aren't comfortable there, don't force them into that role.
Mm-hmm.
They'll kind of self-select. I've seen that happen many times.
Uh-huh.
But those that do self-select need to be nurtured, need to be trained, need to be developed, because nobody goes into a job being a great supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
You're a great technician when you go into your first management job.
Right.
And it's very important for agencies to recognize if they want to develop that person to be the next senior executive, they've got to give them that kind of skill along the way, just as they develop their technical skill.
Well, and I imagine with the difficulty that agencies are having finding those people who are both have that bent and want to pursue it, if you have somebody that wants to pursue it and you're not helping to develop that, they're going to get wandering eyes pretty quickly yeah. and go some other direction, and you won't have them for either purpose.
They're definitely going to go some other direction.
Yeah.
So the leadership programs and the supervisory, mandatory supervisory training, and more importantly, the senior executive development, continuing development of senior executives, is absolutely essential for the government to get the most out of its workforce.
When we come back from the break, let's talk about making that argument on an ROI basis, because I imagine that's something, if I'm sitting in an agency and I'm thinking the same thing we've been talking about, which is I bet my training budget's going to be a lot smaller next mm-hmm. year than it is. Maybe how somebody can go to their boss or go all the way up to the C-level if they need to, or the secretary level and say, here's why you shouldn't do this. Let's see if we can make a financial okay. argument for it when we come
okay.
back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Diane Cochran, the Chief Operating Officer for the Government Services Division at Kelly Anderson & Associates. And we'll continue our conversation in a moment.
NBC News Radio, I'm Pete Williams. In Massachusetts, the cleanup is underway after powerful tornadoes roared through yesterday. This man was in the thick of it.
All of the buildings collapsed. My aunt's house, the whole back of her house is gone. Then she has nowhere to go.
In the central and western parts of the state, 18 communities suffered widespread damage. A man convicted of kidnapping and raping a California girl, J.C. Dugard, and holding her captive for 18 years, has been sentenced to life in prison. Philip Garrido's wife, convicted of being his accomplice, was sentenced to 36 years. Republican Mitt Romney is making it official, announcing in New Hampshire he is running for president.
Barack Obama has failed America.
Romney says he'll focus on the economy and on issues that are high on the list of voter concerns, rising gasoline prices, persistently high unemployment, and continuing home foreclosures. More news at MSNBC.com. I'm Pete Williams, NBC News Radio.
Protection against web-based threats like malware and phishing has become a serious challenge for companies with distributed workforces. Barracuda Networks, the world leader in content security, application delivery, and data protection, with more than 130,000 customers worldwide, can help. Web Security Flex combines physical and virtual gateways with cloud services to protect both on-site and remote users from a single portal. Stop web threats. Visit Barracuda.com/flex to try Barracuda Web Security Flex free for 30 days. That's Barracuda.com/flex.
Could switching to GEICO really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Can you find anything on the internet? Well, I'm sure you can, but don't take my word for it. Just ask this talking dog who can only say I love you. Roll the clip. One more time, talking dog.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com to see how much you could save. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
The Virtualization Expert is brought to you by VMware and Carahsoft.
This is Aileen Black, Vice President of VMware Federal. Federal agencies are transforming server, storage, and networking resources into secure, agile resource pools to deliver IT as a service. This is cloud computing, and it starts with virtualization. When storage, networking, and servers are woven together on a virtualization platform, federal agencies can customize their own evolutionary journey to the cloud. By virtualizing existing IT resources, you can build a private or hybrid cloud infrastructure that delivers agility, security, flexibility, and cost savings. You can build your cloud. More than 200,000 customers are virtualizing mission-critical IT resources with VMware today. If you are interested in cloud computing, shouldn't you join them?
VMware's cloud infrastructure solutions are based on their award-winning virtualization technology. That's the foundation of your cloud. To learn more about adopting the administration's cloud-first policy, visit thevirtualizationexpert.com. That's thevirtualizationexpert.com.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by Quest Government Services. Identify the federal agency problem.
Am I number E enough? All the other information is way prettier. I look fat in this network, don't I?
The answer? Insecure data. With Quest's suite of security solutions, even your most sensitive data stays protected. For a free risk assessment, visit quest.com/federal. That's quest.com/federal.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose, weekday afternoons 3 to 7.
Hugh Hurwitz is the Deputy Chief Financial Officer and Senior Procurement Executive at the Education Department.
We've done a few things on the early communication side here that I think have worked out really well for us. Our Institute for Education Science is one of our customers. We started posting for them videos of their pre-solicitation information on the Internet to help vendors and offers get a better understanding and be able to see at any time what it is we're doing.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com. /in-depth.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Diane Cochran's the Chief Operating Officer of the Government Services Division for Kelly Anderson and Associates, and she's my guest on Industry Chatter today. We were talking about the training budgets that are probably most likely going to be under a fair amount of pressure over the next couple of years, and the way that somebody might make a case on an ROI basis for making sure that money stays there so that you have managers who are skilled in managing and not just in whatever the mission of the particular part of the agency is. How do you build that case? How do you say, this is what I need training-wise, the dollars that I need, and here's specifically how the agency's going to be better for it by the time we're finished spending this money and training up these people?
Let me give you a classic example of where that works really well. And I think everybody intuitively knows this, but not everyone is in the same position. But the Department of Defense invests heavily on the uniform side in leadership development. Everyone is of total agreement that the U.S. military works like a machine because their leaders are focused. They develop the people, not just leadership development, but development all along the way. They also do a fantastic job with civilian development. Although you don't hear as much about it, the training that I received in DOD over 20 years was second to none that I could have gotten anywhere else, having spent 10 years outside of DOD.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you look at how an agency can actually meet its mission requirements, no matter what the things that are thrown at it, DOD does it no matter what. DOD has, they do have the budget for it, but they've justified the budget over the years because they have very mission essential work to be done, very essential to the country's defense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're a great example of how that works. How you take that to a small agency that has a very limited budget is a big challenge.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are other ways they can do it. It's not just setting up training programs. One of the things that we constantly talk to our clients about is mentorship. Taking a former federal executive who has done it, been there, been in that agency, and bring them in as a mentor to your workforce and to your employees wouldn't cost a heck of a lot of money. It's not a formal training program.
Mm-hmm.
But mentorship of the people who've been there, done that, walked the walk, and know all the valleys and pitfalls is a very effective way for leadership development that's not going to cost as much as 5 years of training and development.
Mm-hmm.
There's many ways you can get training, especially around this town. There's training everywhere on management and development. But until agencies really focus on that, they're not going to be as high performing as they need to be.
Mm-hmm.
They focus on the technical piece. They focus on how people can, you know, do the IT, how they develop the budget. And the leftovers, I think, go to management development. And they're not probably performing at their peak ability and not getting the most out of their workforce. But take a look at the agencies that do it well, like DOD.
Uh-huh.
And I think that makes the case right there. Although in hard times when the budget is being cut, it's very difficult to say I'm setting aside 5% of my budget for development of my employees.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, though, with this generation change that we have, the loyalty and the longevity and the stability of the federal workforce that the baby boomers brought is gone.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have people coming into government for 2 or 3 years, and if they're not being developed and they're not being shown a path toward the next level of leadership, they're gonna bolt.
But the other side of that coin is, especially in tough budget times, I imagine, could be, well, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of money on Diane because I don't know if she's going to be here for more than 5 years.
But I say it's a retention tool. If I lay out for Diane a path that develops her to her maximum potential and show her the challenging work, the opportunities that she's going to have, I'm going to retain her.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that goes back to the nature versus nurture. There are some that are going to not want to go in that path.
Right.
But
and that's good to know up front, I guess, better than after you've invested 10 or 15 years in somebody.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with someone saying, I want to stay in this job for the next 25 years because I know it, I love it, and I can be productive.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got the other folks that say, I want to be in a higher level. I want to make part of the decision-making process. And give me the opportunity to do that.
As you have had a couple of years now to be in the private sector, but still working with the government, understanding mm-hmm. now both sides of it, are you finding that it's getting easier to do business with the government, or is it getting harder to do business with the government?
My experience, of course, is the last 18 months, which has been a terrible time for the federal government with its budget issues.
Mm-hmm.
So it's becoming it's a challenge. And the other competimates, as we call them, that I've talked to are finding the same thing. What we're finding is there's more of an emphasis now on cost versus cost plus quality. We're seeing a lot of solicitations that are coming out that say technically acceptable least cost.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw a shift away from that some years ago where it was considered best value to government, where they looked at not only the cost, but the past performance, the quality of the services provided.
Mm-hmm.
I see because of the constraints that agencies are facing now and the challenges, very real challenges they're facing with their budgets, they're looking at where can I get it done technically acceptable with the least cost. So that's a change, and that's more of a challenge for those of us who have been recognized, like Kelly Anderson, for having very high quality expertise and being competitively costed, but not maybe the cheapest cost.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been a challenge for us.
Yeah. I hear a lot about LPTAs at the Pentagon now,
mm-hmm.
More so than I think other agencies, based on just on the things that we've heard Secretary Gates talking about
right.
over the last
right.
year, year and a half, and the changes that are going on there. LPTA is certainly not the only thing, though, on people's plates when it comes to how you're interacting
right.
with the agencies.
Right.
Are you finding that they're able? We talked a little bit about collaboration at the beginning and requirements and
mm-hmm.
so on. Is that overall getting better, getting worse, staying the same in your view?
Again, I have to say my experience hasn't been very long, but I know when I was in the government, I was dealing with the contracting workforce and the vendors.
Right.
I say the communication is absolutely essential, especially in the pre-solicitation phase.
Mm-hmm.
How we as vendors are given the requirements is critical. And because the workforce is really burdened and really taxed, we don't necessarily see the most clear solicitations come out. We'd like to see things like RFIs, for solicitations where we can actually provide information that can help the contracting officer form and put the statement of work together. Mm-hmm. We love industry days where we can actually come in and have a free flow of information. There is some hesitation on many agencies' cases to talk to you about what's coming out. If they would be a little more available and open and have these open discussions before they issue a solicitation, I think the quality of the proposal would be better. We'd know more about what they need and how the requirements are defined.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that we'd like to see happen.
What can you do to make it easier for the agencies?
Well, the first thing we can do is research the agency thoroughly, know what business they're in, talk to some of our subject matter experts who are from the agency, because we have folks from nearly all the agencies, find out what their culture is like. Find out what their strategic plan looks like and what they envision for the future.
Mm-hmm.
And the most important thing we're doing today is watching the budget process, watching the congressional testimony, watching the things that are coming out. We're very curious to see what parts of the mission are going to be dropped if they decrease the size of the workforce.
Yeah. Well, or if that's going to be the case,
because one
of the criticisms of the whole budget process is nobody's saying, we're going to give you this amount less money, and here are the things you don't have to do anymore.
And we've talked about this at Kelly Anderson, and what we've decided is to be flexible, to be agile, and to look at what the challenges the agency is facing by doing thorough market research, doing the due diligence on where they are ending up in the budget process, and being committed to providing the best quality service for the best cost to them.
Mm-hmm. We've got to take one more break. We'll come back and wrap up with Diane Cochran, the Chief Operating Officer of the Government Services Division of Kelly Anderson & Associates, in just a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Maryland truly is the ground zero of cybersecurity. I would like to see students that are coming through this program that are cybersecurity professionals, practitioners, and scholars.
That's Dr. Rick Forno, Graduate Program Director for UMBC Cybersecurity Programs. Attend a free webinar Thursday, June 9th at 1 p.m. Dr. Forno will highlight UMBC's cybersecurity programs and talk about the upcoming Maryland Cyber Challenge and Conference in Baltimore this October. For more information, visit umbc.edu/cyber.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Army says long, repeated overseas deployments often get in the way of continuing education for soldiers, and it hurts their chances for promotions. To help solve that problem, they've started deploying portable electronic schoolhouses to Iraq and Afghanistan. The deployed digital training campus comes with laptops, internet access, voice over IP, and customized Army learning courses. The units have been deployed to 6 overseas locations so far. The Army plans to have 50 by 2015.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
If you're in federal IT, you want to hear more about storage efficiency, especially when storage is eating up your IT budget. But what is storage efficiency? NetApp makes it simple. It's storage that's flexible, that's easier to manage, that requires far less hardware, often only half as much. And half as much means half the cost. IT efficiency starts with storage efficiency built on NetApp and delivered by NetApp partners like CDWG. To get efficient now, visit netapp.com/federal.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
The job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview.
Yeah.
And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's industry chatter, as in the first hour every Thursday on In Depth with Francis Rose. Diane Cochran of Kelly Anderson and Associates is my guest. What are you following on the Hill as far as legislative initiatives, things that may be affecting the way that you do business with the government?
Well, the number one thing we're following is all the talk about legislating the size of the contractor workforce.
Mm-hmm.
We find, and we have found over the years, those of us that have been in government forever and now are on this side of the table, have found that fewer staff and reductions in federal workforce, reduction in contractor workforce never correlates to the reduction in the requirements that are being made. In many, many, many cases, contractors can get the job done cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Many cases. And it makes sense for the government to contract out some work. So we're following that very carefully. I don't know how much traction that has, but I continue to read about those things being discussed. The size of the federal workforce probably could be streamlined, but that work still has to get done.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very concerned about where that's going. The other thing that we're kind of excited about, and a lot of companies who are on the small side of big business, is there is a Federal Register proposal that just ended commentary period about raising the small business ceiling for several of our NAICS codes from $7 million to $14 million. Now, we would fall into that category where we would be able to be considered a small business for many of the management services we provide.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a win-win for everybody because it not only gives more businesses access to the government work, but it also gives the government a broader pool of small businesses to meet their small business quotas and requirements and
mm-hmm.
to get small business engaged. And small business is really the heart of what this country was founded on. So we'd very much like to see that raised. We have pretty good intelligence that it could go up as early as October. So that's when we're following with a lot of interest.
I have a whole long list of questions here that we didn't get a chance to get to, and it's been great to have you. I appreciate you spending your time with me this afternoon.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Happy to do it. Diane Cochran's the Chief Operating Officer of the Government Services Division for Kelly Anderson and Associates, my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You can hear the entire conversation posted later this afternoon on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.